Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, May 25th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy National Wine Day.
What kind of wine? Would you spell that, please?
Any kind of W-I-N-E, your heart desires.
Not the other kind, huh?
Not with an H in it. No, you
and
stay
away. And we were just talking about that right before the program.
Yes, we were. Yes, we were. But look, more importantly, it's National Missing Children Day. May 25th each year shines a spotlight on child safety. The day also honors the dedicated professionals who work tirelessly protecting children all around the country. Now, in 1983, President Reagan proclaimed National Missing Children's Day, recognizing the hundreds of thousands of children who went missing each year. Well, first, the good news. Most children who go missing do come home. According to the Polly Kloss Foundation, 99.8% of children who are reported missing return back home. Of those who are actually abducted, 9% are kidnapped by a family member. Only a small fraction are stranger abductions. However, the fact remains, if it happens to one child, that's certainly one child too many. We know there are several organizations out there, like the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, plus local police departments, that you can contact to report a missing child, or you can call 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 800-843-5678. So there you go, National Missing Children's Day. Melody?
Although that 1% is of what number?
Well, that's a good question. 99... So I think it looks as though the 9% kidnapped by a family member are of the 0.2%. Now, I don't know how many thousands of kids go missing every year or that.
So I don't know, because I always thought those numbers were huge. There shouldn't be any child that goes missing. And but I agree. I think a lot of it is those that, get murdered and so forth, is family members and or soon to be family members, or, you know, whatever. But but we don't know. You know, but I also thought that the stranger abductions was also much higher. But wow, it's a sad state of affairs.
Yes, reflective of our society today.
Well, and that's the problem.
That's another story.
That's the problem. Is our society anymore? Let's go ahead and take a peek at gold, because that is also part of our financial society. Gold today got hit. Once again, I would imagine that the dollar gained a little bit of strength, and it has been moving up quite a bit with all the talk of it being blown out of the water here pretty soon. But so we're looking at gold today down $18 at $1,941. Silver was down 32 cents at $22.82. Platinum was down 4 at $1,031. Platinum managed to be up a whole buck, 1,446. The USDX up 0.41. Now we're looking at 104.28. Crude oil was down almost two and a half bucks at 72. The paper markets today, it seems like, well, the Dow was lower by 35 points. Both the S&P and the NASDAQ was stronger. S&P was up by 36 points. The NASDAQ was up by almost 1.75%. So there you have it for that one. And Europe, I believe, was all negative. I don't know if it's because of the everyone's holding their breath for the big debt debacle coming soon. Asian markets, Nikkei was stronger. That's the only one, 118 points, which is really no big deal. 10-year yield, 3.82. So that's really moving up quite a bit. And oil, natural gas was down almost 5% at 2.28. So I don't know, Dave. It's always quiet before holiday weekends, going into a three-day weekend. And I don't think this is any different. I would imagine tomorrow being a Friday, I would think all the markets would be up pretty strong. That's just the way it is. So everybody has they don't have anything to worry about, but we'll have to see if that is the case tomorrow when tomorrow arrives. So let's go ahead. And as I mentioned, there's no debt ceiling. Kevin McCarthy told reporters that negotiations over raising the nation's debt limit, they were progressing, somewhat, towards a deal despite disagreements over the spending. And again, we can count down 8 days before the default. And it seemed like this urgency became a little more apparent later yesterday when Fitch Ratings, I read that, where one of the big three rating agencies placed the U.S. AAA status on rating watch negative. So they're going to watch it. I wonder if it's going to do any type of tricks. Anyway, Fitch said it still thinks that there will be a resolution to the situation, but added the brinkmanship over the debt ceiling, failure of authorities to meaningfully tackle medium-term fiscal challenges that's going to lead to rising budget deficits and a growing debt burden signal downside risks to the U.S. credit worthiness. So that's kind of a severe warning after McCarthy projected hope that negotiators would reach a deal in time to default. You would even think that even with the discussion of possibly failing, that they would still lower the debt rating to some degree, knowing that we're at this verge of whatever you want to call it, Dave.
Yeah, I guarantee you that, not to interrupt you, but I guarantee you that based on my own experience, working with certain municipal governments in the past, that whether it's Fitch, Moody's, or S&P, smaller and even larger cities facing similar financial crises would have long ago been downgraded a notch.
Yeah.
For you know, bringing their local communities and taxpayers to the brink of you know, this kind of unsettling uncertainty. I mean, and like you said, even if, I'm sorry, we're going to get off on a tangent here. Even when this debt ceiling issue is resolved in the short term, that is to get past this, you know, the scary tactics, thoughts of default, we still got big issues in front of us. We've got, you know, but besides the annual appropriation bills that do nothing but add to the debt burden of our children and grandchildren, we've got Social Security and Medicare trust funds, particularly Social Security and disability trust funds, shortfalls with their own specific defaults in the coming years, facing it. And what a tremendous opportunity this would have been, I think, Melody. And, you know, it was never going to happen because largely because of the president's intent to, you know, keep, quote, budget negotiations separate from the debt ceiling. It just seems like another missed opportunity to confront and deal with that problem and shore up funding for those trust funds for the next, who knows, 50, 75 years, perhaps, or even 20 or 25.
How can they shore up funding when there isn't any money to be had?
Well, there would be. That's the point. Well, there are a number of ways. I mean, one, you know, aside, I mean, certainly there are two places. One, cutting benefits, particularly for future
politicians,
retirees.
Yeah, how about cutting that for the...
One, that's not going to happen, we know. Secondly, you close some revenue loopholes. Well, on the revenue side, you can look at, you know, the different CPIs that might be more appropriate for the elderly. But in the revenue, you close some of the loopholes. I mean, you're cut off now. Social Security tax, payroll taxes are only withheld up to, I forget what the number is this year, 160-some thousand. And after that, you're scot-free. Well, there have been all sorts of proposals, whether, you know, just to keep it going ad infinitum or, you know, stop it at 162 and then reinstate it at 400,000 so the wealthier among us help pay.
Wealthy doesn't need Social Security.
It's all right.
Why don't they just let people save on their own?
Well, there you go. I mean, then what you're doing is really creating, you're widening the inequality that we'd see down the road. Because those who have money, Melody, if America is the land of opportunity. And those that don't won't be able to because they can barely afford to make ends meet now.
Yeah, and they're already on all government programs and everything.
No, that's not, well, some of them, yeah. But
a lot of them.
But also
the problem is, and okay, let's take that group of folks instead of, you know, how do we help them instead of giving them money? How about what happened to the jobs they were able to do with a decent wage? They're gone. Why can't they work on something like that? Instead of, they should be able to do those jobs. That's what factory work was really for, you know. And I mean, hey, I worked in a factory once. I didn't last very long. It's hard work. But I worked on the line at Motorola because it was a job. So, you know, I mean, I suppose you can always look to both sides. But what is the common denominator that really gets the job done and truly helps people instead of, you know, penalizing other people or, you know, so they can have a savings account, so they can take care of themselves. They don't teach people anymore how to take care of themselves. Anyway, let's move on. Would you like to say anything about Stephen Scalise?
Not particularly. You know, there's some disagreement over whether or not Congress was going to recess for the Memorial Day holiday. Initially, they were told, well, plan to stay and work over the weekend. I suppose there may be a handful of elected members that will, I suspect. On the other hand, that the senior staff who's doing the negotiating are going to be eating their hot dog and hamburger picnics in with their sleeves rolled up in their offices, trying to come up with a deal by the end of the weekend. But the bottom line is, as we approach this limit, how hard or real it is, members of Congress have returned home or will be returning home to their home districts this evening for at least, I think it might be for a week. And they'll be called back, they'll be given notice, probably 24 hours, to come back to Washington to vote on any plan that is come up with.
So that really leads me to believe it really isn't as serious as what they're touting it to be. And or they would have stayed there and gotten it done. So you know, that's the way
staff is getting it done. That's how it normally is in these negotiations.
Yeah. It's another Jobless Claims Thursday, Dave.
Yes, it is. Bring
Woo-hoo.
It on.
And those applications for those jobless claims rose slightly. But it's really not, still seems to be healthy. The number of Americans filing for jobless claims for the week ending May 20th rose by 4,000 to 229,000 from the week before. The previous week's numbers, they were revised down by 17,000. Wow. The weekend claims numbers are broadly seen as representing the number of layoffs. And analysts pointed to a sustained increase in the four-week averages as a sign that layoffs are accelerating. But they're still reluctant to predict that a spike in layoffs is imminent. Of course not. Over 1.8 million people were collecting unemployment benefits the week that ended May 13th, and that's about 5,000 more than the previous week, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, this labor market still favors workers, but there have been some recent numbers coming in that suggest that the Fed's interest rate hiking may be having somewhat of an intended effect. Aside from GDP numbers, you know, we got a government report recently that showed that job openings fell in March to their lowest level in about 2 years. Plus, there have been an increasing number of high-profile layoffs, one of which we'll talk a little bit about after this, if we have time, mostly in the tech sector, where many companies acknowledge having overhired during the pandemic.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, they really overhired. Yeah. I mean, I think, really? They overhire is their excuse. Facebook parent Meta, they're slashing 10,000 more jobs. 10,000 more jobs. They announced in November that they were going to cut 11,000 jobs. In addition to the layoffs, Meta said the other day that it would not fill 5,000 open positions. This will be tough, and there's no way around that, CEO Mark Zuckerberg said. That's a lot of people. A lot of people. Early last month, Meta posted falling profits and its third consecutive quarter of declining revenue. But on the same day, the company said it would buy back as much as $40 billion of its own stock. That's one way of keeping the stock from crashing.
Baby. what gets me is that is how investors view this kind of news. Wall Street is really, they love layoffs. Meta shares rose 7% after this newest round of layoffs were announced.
Used to be just the other way around, right? But I guess we live in a world where what's right is wrong and what's wrong is right. Anyway, we'll be right back. We know that is right. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And I'll make this announcement now. We will be closed on Monday, of course, for Memorial Day, and there will be a rebroadcast on Monday's program. So everybody's going to take the day off, and I'll tell you what, it's freezing here on the eastern shore of Maryland. I looked at my weather up in for State College, because that's where I have to go every periodically. They're having 80 degree plus next week. We don't even get in the 80s next week.
And it's in the low 90s here in southeastern PA, supposedly.
You are?
And I'm in a sweatshirt today.
You're going to be in the low 90s?
Next weekend, yeah.
And you're central PA, right?
Southeastern.
Well, I take it back. We have next Friday is 80 degrees, and that's our highest temperature that they show. We're 66, 69, 70. That's ridiculous.
There's actually a spring. Rejoice.
Okay. Is that what this is?
Spring. Yeah. It's wake up and ask, what season is it today?
Yeah. I'll tell you. All right. Heading into the break, we were talking about Meta and everybody that they're laying off. And, you know, it's funny. They're laying off all these folks and so forth and whatnot, but yet they're still able to revise the GDP up. It's just so funny. But it's still a lackluster 1.3%. I can remember if it was 1.3%, all heck would be happening. Remember we were being promised 5% GDP, 8% GDP, 4%. Now we're at 1.3, and that's the revised up number, the 1.3%,
yes.
I believe.
Yeah. Yes.
It's amazing. Yeah, and yet they will not claim that we're in a recession yet. Mm-mm-mm. But and of course there is talking about it's all the reason that it's the Federal Reserve's aggressive drive to try to tame this inflation that we have. And with the 10 interest rate hikes that they've had over the past 14 months and currently looking at 5 percentage points. So anything you'd like to add to that, Dave?
Well, I just note that while the U.S. economy continues to hang in the balance, according to the Commerce Department anyway, we're in soft landing territory, not broad recession just yet. The same can't be said of Europe's largest economy, Germany, which has fallen into a technical official recession. Their economy shrank during the first quarter, marking the second straight quarter of negative growth. That's one definition, classic definition of recession, declining by 0.3% in the first quarter after a drop of 0.5% during the fourth quarter last year. Now, though employment in Germany has risen and inflation has eased, the higher interest rates there keep weighing on spending and investment. Econ 101. We'll see what happens in the coming months here and elsewhere in Europe.
Well, here we have Duke University Professor Campbell Harvey. I guess he is the developer of the yield curve indicator, and he said a recession is coming. The recession is coming. That it could even start this month. Well, he only has a couple more days, if it starts for this month. But what he did say, that, hey, we're already slowing. The question is how deep the recession will be. Now, this is the guy, the developer of the yield curve indicator, which everyone follows fairly closely, and it has been fairly accurate over the years. He added that the downturn could last 2 to 3 quarters and place the blame on the Fed's aggressive rate hikes. Well, I think it's going to last a whole lot longer. But again, Dave, heck, we had a one-month recession back in 2020, so who knows? Mm. But they're certainly talking light about it.
Yeah, I'm not so sure how, that we're going to be talking in those terms 6-9 months from now. But Harvey's known for, his 86 PhD dissertation where he, predicted economic downturns by comparing the yields of the 10-year Treasury against the 3-month Treasury. Of course, in periods of economic growth, those shorter-term Treasuries provide lower yields than the longer-term ones like the 10, 20, and 30 years. So investors are, more comfortable betting on the near future. But when these yields invert, like they have for the last several months, actually, the 10-year Treasuries gain demand over the 3-month, 1 and 2 years. It signals economic uncertainty. And for the last 8 inversions, ladies and gentlemen, Harvey discovered that a recession has, in fact, always followed. So yield curves remained inverted throughout this year. As of lunchtime today in the East, 10-year treasuries were just about 3.79%, 3.8, versus 5.4% for 3-month bills.
I don't know if there's a comparison. It'd be interesting, Dave, to see the depth of the inversion versus how deep the recession is, or how long this the inversion goes on, determines the length.
Length and the severity.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take a look at that for next week. That would be, I think that's a real interesting question.
I do come up with them every now and then. But, hey, let's get, time is just whipping by here. And, you know, we talk about recessions and the troubles that people are having, but they're still planning on traveling this season, this summer. And airlines are trying to avoid the chaos of last year. And everyone is trying to save a few bucks on pricier fares in these hotel rooms. Some travelers say they're going to settle for fewer trips than they hope to take, or they will drive instead of fly. Others are finding different money-saving sacrifices, like credit cards. And the number of people going through the U.S. airports hit pandemic-era highs last weekend, and those records are almost certain to be broken over the Memorial Day weekend. I'll tell you what, traffic here on the Eastern Shore, I've noticed a huge pickup just beginning today and a little bit yesterday. So the number of people going through the U.S. airports hit pandemic era highs last weekend. Oh, I already told you that. 37 million Americans will drive at least 50 miles from home this weekend, an increase of more than 2 million from Memorial Day last year. But still below those numbers in 2019, Dave. I don't know if there's any other interesting numbers we could pull out of that report. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the TSA expects 10 million travelers between tomorrow and Monday, about 14% increase over last year, even slightly more than Memorial Day 2019. With increased demand comes increased prices. Average rate up a little bit, up $7, $157 a night from $150 last year. Daily rate for Airbnb and Vrbo properties up to $316 per night. Still just a little bit higher than a year ago. Gas, on the other hand, is down about a buck a gallon, according to AAA, $3.56 versus $4.60 last year. So there's the some of the good and bad. We hear the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, is training about 3,000 more traffic controllers. Unfortunately, they won't be ready until this fall at the earliest.
And it'd be interesting because I read articles about how they're finding their new controllers and that they're actually training less time. And so it's again, that's what happens when these businesses seem to lost a little bit of control of their funds. And
yeah, you got to be careful. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, training in those areas is just, well, it's life or death.
I heard they're bringing them out of high schools. They're trying because, hey, we have an employment problem and they can't find people to work. So they've opened and they lowered just several businesses, several different industries have lowered the pledge line in order to get in.
Wow.
So you're not getting the same high qualified people to begin with. And in certain jobs like this, it's a scary proposition for sure.
A lot at stake. My wife and I were in Boston over the weekend at a wedding. We drove up and back, much to our chagrin. We were just coming home on one of the interstates, which is kind of like in the direct landing path to Logan Airport. And we were counting. There was no more than a 30-second gap between the time that, you know, the airplanes flew over us. And, you know, you just think to yourself, there's not a whole lot of room for error. When it comes to landing, coordinating the landing and takeoff of big planes with 200 and 300 people aboard.
I know. And it's been a while since there has, I pray there aren't any, but it's been a while since there was some sort of a mishap.
Indeed.
Levity is golden. Do we have, since we're talking about air, what about your air travel etiquette, Dave?
Yeah. After 21 years as a flight attendant, Christy Corbell has seen it all. Since we entered the busy summer season, Corbell believes it's worth discussing some of the common courtesies that she thinks could make flying more pleasant for everyone. For those of you who do fly, here are her airline etiquette rules. I'm going to cut them short. I think they're 12, but we have a lot of other things to talk about. First of all, she says everyone has the right to recline their seats, but there's a right and wrong way to do it. Wrong way is just slamming back the seat as hard and as fast as you can.
Oh, you're not supposed to do that?
I forgot to tell our 3 and 4 year old grandsons that in our recent trip. That has broken laptops, spilled drinks especially, and caused even fistfights, causing some flights to be diverted. So be aware of your surroundings, she says. Next, clean up after your kids and yourself, I might add. Most flyers aren't maids, and neither are flight attendants. They generally don't have access to vacuums, brooms, or cleaning supplies that go beyond hand soap, wet wipes, and air freshener. Number three, overhead bins aren't your personal Tetris game. Mm. Bins are first come, first serve in economy class, but you don't own the spot directly above your seat. And it's not acceptable to take out someone else's to make yours fit. Here's one that I've seen every time I've flown, it seems. No one wants to hear your FaceTime or your telephone conversations. We don't need to hear both sides of your conversations. Plus, boarding an airplane isn't the time for your long goodbyes. Next big one, yeah, this is interesting. The middle seat gets both armrests, the consolation prize for being squished between two people with nowhere to lean, she says, case close. Here's one I like. I'll skip over a couple. Keep your socks on, ladies and gentlemen. If it's a long flight, by all means, relax, take off your shoes, but never a reason not to wear your socks. Foot smell inescapable. She highly recommends putting footwear back on to walk down to the lavatory.
Too many people.
And let's just, related to that is her last one. Number 12, flush, please, when you're in the lavatory. It should be common sense, but somehow it isn't. If you can't find the flush button, look for it. She guarantees it's there on every airplane. And that, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden.
Well, thank you for bringing us a little bit of levity, Dave.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, you know, now we'll get into some unlevity.
Unlevity? Absolutely.
Microsoft yesterday warned that the Chinese state had some hackers that compromised critical U.S. cyber infrastructure across numerous industries, and it was actually focused on gathering intelligence. But we know they've been trying to gather intelligence of the U.S. The Chinese hacking group, codenamed Bolt Typhoon, has operated since mid-2021, Microsoft said. The organization is apparently working to disrupt critical communications infrastructure between the U.S. and Asia. The NSA has put out a bulletin detailing how the hack works and how cybersecurity teams should respond. So that is kind of unnerving, Dave. Frightening.
Yes, it is indeed. Apparently, infrastructure, nearly every critical sector has been impacted by cyber attacks. Communications, transport, maritime industries, well as government organizations being targeted.
Oh, and let's see if there's any quick ones. We can do the quick copper one. It's kind of interesting. I think we have time. Copper prices have fallen below $8,000 per ton for the first time since November. The metal soared last fall on hopes that China's reopening would provide a jolt to the global economy. The reversal is just another signal that the world's second largest economy and its largest growth engine, maybe it isn't roaring back as fast as some folks had hoped. One thing I know that is roaring by quite fast is this program, and we're heading into our second break. We'll be right back. Please stay with us. Take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say baby. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off taking care of clients this final segment. You know how to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. You know, while the U.S. Supreme Court ponders what to do about President Biden's executive order for giving $10,000 to $20,000 in student loan debt, the House is moving ahead with its own action. House Republicans primarily voted in favor of a bill yesterday that would claw back, pause student loan payments, and block the president's student debt forgiveness program. The bill, called the Congressional Review Act, CRA, was passed by a 218-203 vote with, it looks like, two Democratic representatives voting in favor of the measure. It would require the Education Department to reverse months of forbearance since September 2022 and waived interest charges that were part of the federal response to the pandemic. Would also prevent the implementation of President Biden's debt cancellation regulation or order, regardless of how the Supreme Court eventually rules on the legality of the program. the measure which the president has vowed to veto if it passes the Senate, with the 40 million student loan borrowers with past due balances on their loans plus new interest charges. Abby Shafroth, who's an attorney with the National Consumer Law Center, said voting in favor of this bill is really a pretty extraordinary slap in the face to representatives' constituents, because she claims it would break a promise the government has already made to constituents to provide them with some life-changing debt relief, but also increase their student loan balances right now by undoing past months of 0% and retroactively charging interest for that time. You know, the first part of that, the debt relief, I think reasonable people can disagree. The retroactive change with the interest, I just think is just a tad unfair. In any event, many individuals whose loans were discharged under longstanding forgiveness programs like the Public Service Loan Forgiveness could see their debts reinstated as well, according to Eden Issel at the National Consumers League. American Federation of Teachers and the Student Borrower Protection Center, released a new report the other day showing that this bill would cause far greater harm to public service workers that have student debt. About 269,000 public service workers across the country who received debt cancellation from September 22 through March of this year through this loan forgiveness program would have about $19.5 billion in debt put back in place as a result of this bill. On the other hand, we have the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, which estimated that if the bill is enacted into law, it would reduce deficits by $316 billion through 2033. President of the CRFB, Maya McGinnis, instead said the administration should find a bipartisan path forward that truly reforms the student loan system. The back and forth between supporters and critics, however, is probably moot, because it's very unlikely the bill is going to pass in the Senate or survive a presidential veto, although there are question marks with Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. In any event, their daily briefing, press briefing yesterday before the House vote, White House Press Secretary Karine Pierre said President Biden won't stand for it. He will veto this bill. Well, we'll see what happens, how that unfolds. Hey, in yesterday's Wall Street on Parade newsletter, Pam and Russ Martins remind us that the Fed has been involved with nonstop scandals for the past 2 years. It's actually gone back farther than that, particularly if you include their lack of supervision of J.P. Morgan Chase, which has been involved in guilty pleas with consent decrees on five felony charges, including manipulating the precious metal markets. But the Martins report, the Martins report, the Fed giving trillions of dollars in repo loans to Wall Street banks starting in September 2019 and then covering up its massive bailout. Then, after former Dallas Fed Prez Robert Kaplan was caught trading stocks while having access to confidential Fed information, the Fed simply referred it to its own inspector general. Not surprisingly, the Martins say 19 months later, still no results from his so-called investigation. And there are others as well, pointing the Martins do to Senator Elizabeth Warren's characterization of the Fed as a culture of corruption. So then comes the latest scandal, courtesy of BB correspondent Andy Verity and his new book called Rigged: The Incredible True Story of the Whistleblowers Jailed After Exposing the Rotten Heart of the Financial System. Although the Martins report that the book won't be released until next week, June 1st, advanced printing of certain segments are already causing a big stir. Just after one day, news of the central bank plot has gone viral, and they're producing calls for investigations by the British Parliament. The stunning crux of Verity's book is that the Fed, the Bank of England, the European Central Bank, and other central banks in Europe orchestrated a conspiracy during the 2008 Great Recession to fix the interest rate benchmark known as LIBOR. They write that as part of that conspiracy, Verity claims that the Fed and other central banks secretly bullied the too-big-to-fail banks on both sides of the Atlantic to lower their LIBOR submissions to artificially keep interest rates lower. LIBOR, which stands for London Interbank Offered Rate, was the interest rate that determines what banks pay to borrow short-term from one another. Because of various fixing scandals, LIBOR is being phased out and is already being used by the Secured Overnight Financing Rate, or SOFR for short. Thanks to an audit by the Government Accountability Office that was released in 2011, the Fed secretly pumped a total of $16 trillion in below-market rate loans from December 2007 to at least July 2010 to prop up those same global banks that were making these submissions. The Martins write that Verity's new book picks up where Noemi Prinz's 2018 book, Collusion, How Central Banks Rigged the World, leaves off. Prinz comes right out and charges in her book that G7 bank collusion was the new black. According to a Federal Reserve statement in October 28, 2008, several banks, again, Bank of England, the Fed, the ECB, the Riksbank, Swiss National, Bank of Canada, Bank of Japan, announced they had cooperated in unprecedented joint actions, such as the provision of liquidity to reduce strains in financial markets in their respective countries. Two important and worthy reads these books are. Thank you, Russ and Pam Martins, for another eye-opening column. And last today, Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal, I like to quote, writes, nobody knows the exact debt ceiling X date. We just know that every day without a deal, we're moving one day closer to it. Well, nobody can really say what will happen if no agreement is reached to raise it, because full-blown default hasn't happened in modern times. All we really do know for sure is that for a long time, the White House was insisting it wouldn't negotiate over hiking it, and now it is. So Wiesenthal asks, well, how did the White House end up in this situation? His simple answer, basically a failure several months ago to have a plan B, C, or D. When the Republicans won the House last year, in particular when Kevin McCarthy got his 15 rounds of voting to secure the speakership, it became instantly obvious that some kind of debt ceiling scenario would be highly uncertain. Presumably, the White House could still have insisted on a clean debt bill, debt ceiling increase, while taking risk management precautions in the event that a clean increase wasn't forthcoming. One possible path, Wiesenthal says, would have been to lay the groundwork to issue interest-only bonds that have zero face value and thus, by the letter of the law, don't add to the debt or the debt ceiling. But that type of thing takes planning. It takes software coding. It takes communication with primary dealers, with members of Congress, and so forth. As Skanda Amarnath and Arnab Datta said in Wiesenthal's Oddlot podcast in January 2020, Steve Mnuchin, then Secretary of the Treasury, announced the launch of a so-called 20-year console bond, but that was only after years of study and months of prep. Because that prep didn't, as far as anyone know, begin after the November elections when the debt ceiling risk became obvious, the president just doesn't have a credible alternative to negotiations. Having trashed other options like minting the platinum coin has also weakened the administration's position, giving more leverage to McCarthy and his camp. Now, there's been a lot of talk about invoking the 14th Amendment, which people talk about as if it's something like pleading the Fifth. But while the 14th Amendment compels the government to honor its debt, it's not a verb. Instead, as Wiesenthal's colleague Tracy Alloway puts it, it's more like a legally untested frame of mind. It creates an obligation on the part of the executive to find a way to continue debt service, even if the debt ceiling isn't hiked. In other words, it's not the 14th Amendment versus the coin, or the 14th Amendment versus consul bonds. It's that 14th Amendment is why the White House needs to find some workaround in the event the debt ceiling isn't hiked before the Treasury runs out of money to pay all the bills, which Wiesenthal notes brings us to prioritization. The idea here is that if the debt ceiling is hit, then what will happen is that we'll have something akin to a government shutdown. That's when the Treasury keeps making interest payments on the debt but starts to pay, withhold paying other bills. And that could actually happen. But it should be understood that this is a deeply problematic issue and raises all kinds of constitutional and separation of power issues. In a normal government shutdown, there's a blueprint for what gets shut down and what doesn't. National Parks and Department of Education might cease operations, but the Department of Defense keeps going and Social Security checks keep going out. There's a known difference between mandatory spending on defense and entitlements and discretionary spending that's regularly reappropriated. But in a payment prioritization environment, that's all out the window. Suddenly, the president must unilaterally pick and choose what payments to keep making while also keeping cash on hand to pay bondholders each and every day. In our system of government, the Constitution's power of the purse rests with Congress. The president isn't allowed to make this or that spending decisions. Yet this is exactly what prioritization would entail. And while people might have misgivings about the precedent of some unusual debt ceiling end runs like the coin, there's a potentially dangerous precedent that'll be set if it's established that once the debt ceiling is hit, suddenly the president gets all kinds of powers to pick and choose spending priorities. And it's safe to assume that if prioritization happens, lawsuits are gonna fly from groups that aren't getting paid their congressionally mandated appropriations, lawsuits from congressional Republicans and Republican groups. This entire scenario of hitting the X date is tough to understand because, well, they're just bad options out there. But let's, again, remember why these bad options are available. Because the White House didn't plan for better options, and because congressional Republicans continue to play the hostage game because they can. Well, let's end the week on that note. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody and Butch, I think. I know they're off Monday. Stay tuned. Tune in tomorrow, the week leading up to the Memorial Day holiday. Also be on the lookout for our blog and your email inboxes tomorrow. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have fun. Bye-bye. If I got me a